The definition of missionary is sent one. And when we typically think of a missionary, we think of someone who serves in a foreign country. Oh, and I'm gonna be sent one now and send out the children to kids worship. Because I don't think they want to hear my message, so they have a much better message for the kids in their worship service. So that's a great illustration. They're being sent out to the Christian education building. And missionaries are sent ones, and we typically think of a missionary as someone who serves in a foreign country, working cross-culturally, trying to reach the gospel to many who are unreached. I like, however, also what Baptist understanding of missions. My wife Grace is from a Southern Baptist background, and having visited her dad's church in Arizona, where he was serving at the time, they had two kinds of missions. They had what's called foreign missions and home missions. And being home missions, actually, I think is a good understanding as well, because it recognizes that brothers and sisters can be sent as missionaries to a variety of missionary contexts, even here in the U.S. And that could be a variety of ministries. It could be a cross-cultural ministry. It could be a chaplain ministry in a hospital. It could be reaching underprivileged kids somewhere. It could be a variety of things. But in any case, it acknowledges the fact that someone is sent out, either by the church or by a mission board. And today I'm going to take a brief time to discuss Jesus' ministry, where he sends out his apostles on a mission. And I'll do a little bit of a background on that, and then we're going to hear from one of our missionaries that our church supports, Grace Shen. There's a little bit of a background on her in the fellowship building. As you go to get your lunch today, you can read a little bit more about her. But she used to attend our church, I'm told, and attended CIU, and now she's working in East Asia. And so I'm going to do a little bit of biblical theological background on Luke, and then she's going to share a little bit how that's worked out in her life. And so let's turn to Luke chapter 9, verse 1 through 6, and let us read together. When Jesus had called the 12 together, he gave them power and authority to drive out all demons and to cure diseases. And he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. He told them, take nothing for your journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra shirt. Whatever house you enter, stay there until you leave that town. If people do not welcome you, leave their town and shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them. So they set out and went from village to village, proclaiming the good news and healing people everywhere. I see three points I'm going to briefly go over from this passage. And the first one is calling. And I think there's a different aspect of calling that we see here. It says that he called the 12 together. And so this calling is a vocational calling. Those of us who are pastors, we often talk about being called to ministry. And as I was preparing and seeking God's will, I was trying to discern his call to ministry in my life. And so the Lord oftentimes, and in this case, he called the apostles to ministry. He called me to pastoral ministry. He calls others to ministry as deacons and as elders and as missionaries. But it's not just Christian-type vocations, I think, that God is concerned about. I think he calls everybody to different areas and places in life. And so someone can also be called as a doctor or a lawyer or as a professor or as a carpenter or whatever. The Lord wants us to be in the place where we can best serve him and utilize the people, be the people who we are and utilize the gifts that he's given us. And so if someone has a calling, a vocational calling as a carpenter, and then they end up being a pastor, they're probably going to be frustrated. Likewise, if I tried to be a carpenter, then everything would break and it would be a disaster, you know, around the home and the church. So God has a calling for us, and we need to discern that. In this case, it is a vocational calling to the apostles to be some of the disciples to be apostles. There's also a general calling, and we see here that he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. And so And so the general calling is to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ and the gospel, to fulfill the great commission to go and make disciples of all nations. Everyone is called in this way. Our church is called in this way. We are called as individuals to seek to lead others to Christ. And for those of us who were here last week, we heard from Dr. Kwok and a little bit about how we can go about being those who seek to share the gospel with others. But I also see here a specific calling, and it says he sent them out that he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of the gospel and to heal the sick. And he was doing this, we see, from village to village. And so this was a very specific calling. It wasn't a perpetual calling for all of their life, for all time. They were to go to this region. He called them specifically to go to the area where they were serving and to preach the gospel and to meet the needs of people. And so it was for a specific time. Later on, they came back. They rejoiced, they shared of what happened in their ministry, and then they went on and continued to follow Jesus. And this would be, for some of us, the Lord will call us to stay, serve on a short-term mission. There's those I know that went to, where did you go last year? Uruguay, yeah. So that was a specific short-term call to go there to a specific time and place, and then it ended. Others of us will be going to China later in March, and so God's calling us specifically to go there, and he's calling others to go to Florida. And so there's specific callings for time and place. But nonetheless, we're called to seek God's calling in our lives, whether that be for the big things like our vocation or even for the small things such as what to do at a specific time. We also see a cost here. He told them, take nothing for the journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, nothing, no extra shirt. Now, again, I don't think this is a perpetual type calling that we have to just live in poverty. There's some monks and some priests that take vows of poverty and they seek to live this way for their whole life. This was a specific calling at a specific time, but nonetheless, I think it points to a cost that we all have in following Jesus. And it may mean, as a pastor, I'm seeking the Lord in that ministry, or someone who's a missionary, we're giving up other things that maybe we could have been. I know that when I was younger, I wanted to be a rich and famous and well-known attorney, you know, win cases and make a lot of money. But that wasn't what God was calling me to do. And so there's an opportunity cost, in a sense, that's something that I've now given up for the sake of the gospel. And some people have to make pretty substantial, considerably substantial costs as they seek to serve the Lord wherever they are. And so there is an associated cost. And then we even see here that if people do not welcome you, leave their town and shake the dust off their feet as a testimony against them. Now, I'm not saying that we should, as we try to lead our friends and family to Christ, that if they reject the gospel, we need to shake the dust off our feet and in a sense, curse them because of their rejection of the gospel. I think we want to be a little more winsome than that and pray for them. But nonetheless, the apostles were told by Jesus that they would likely experience rejection, and so we can expect the same thing at times where we may be trying to live our life as a Christian, and then those friends of ours may not really appreciate the fact that we live in a certain way and that our lives have changed, and so we may experience rejection. Or many have experienced rejection by family. I've known many young adults who have come to Christ from Buddhist families, and their families, in a sense, have rejected them because they did not want them to be Christians, and so they become ostracized by their family. Again, it's another cost associated with following Jesus. And finally, the last thing we see here is communication. So they set out from village to village, proclaiming the good news and healing everywhere. And we see a twofold communication strategy to share the gospel and to meet people's needs. Historically, these two components have been together, but about, 150 years ago, there was a controversy, and there was liberal churches that sought to proclaim a social gospel, that we need to meet people's needs and reach out to the poor and seek to heal the sick. And then conservative churches says, no, it's not a social gospel. It's about leading people to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ so that they can go to heaven. And so conservatives reacted against it and then really became disengaged from any kind of social ministry. And thankfully, that's beginning to change. And the lines are beginning to break down where there's many conservative evangelical churches that are seeking to feed the poor and meet the social needs of people. And there's liberal churches that are also seeking to share the gospel with others that they may know the good news. And so we're called to do both. If someone's hungry, it's very likely that they won't hear our message. But if we feed them and they sense the love that we have for them, they're more likely to hear what we have to say. And so today we're going to hear from Grace, and she's going to talk a little bit about how God's calling has played out in her life and how the Lord is using her in East Asia. So I'll give the rest of the time to her.